he scores!
All right, so hello and welcome. This is the, I do believe, the seventh actual Leafs Nation podcast. With me today is Mike Forbes.
Hi, how are you doing?
And we got Danny Gray, of course, as well.
How's it going?
All right, on. So how are you gentlemen doing today?
Well, I don't know, good, I guess. You know, it feels like Michael was just saying before we started recording here how long he's been blogging for the Leafs, and I've been doing it for like 3 years tops, and I am just drained. I do not know how people summon the strength and courage of will necessary to watch this team year in and year out.
I survived the 80s. Like, I'm 40, so I've been following the Leafs for a long time. And the Leafs went, I think it was from 79 to 91 without a single 500 season. So when you've gone through that, you can get through this.
At least they made the playoffs, though.
Yeah, there were that's true. I think they made the playoffs one season with 52 points.
Those were the days.
But it's kind of like, you know, after you've done hard time for a while, you know, you kind of think, I can do a year or two standing up. This will be easy.
So you're fine.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, I was not all that vested in this year's season. I kind of expected this tailspin, and I didn't have much confidence in the goaltending. So, you know, if you don't get too high, you don't get too low, I guess is the way to look at it.
All right, so the way I want to think about this podcast is basically a where do we go from here situation, right? So getting a little bit like prescriptive, like what the heck are we going to do to fix this? Right now, the Leafs, just with their last loss to Washington, dropped to 69 games and 68 points. And on this date last year, they had 68 games played and 68 points. So, you know, the tailspin has now sent us beyond the gap that the Leafs had to and failed to make up for last year to make the playoffs. So I think it's pretty safe to say, you know, this season is almost definitely a write-off. And, you know, going into next year, I'm not sure how we begin fixing everything. But let's start with the forwards. Danny, do you have any ideas what is the biggest spot to fill?
Well, I think you're still, I mean, everyone, half the league is still looking for that, you know, bona fide number one center. I mean, it was really great that Grabowski was able to sign an extension. So the team's pretty much set for its number two and a guy who can play the tough minutes. And I think under or Carlisle, the way Carlisle is going to use Grabowski, he'll be pretty much a 1A or a 1B center. But I think that another top center is probably the most pressing issue on this team right now. And then just scoring depth. I mean, you look down the roster and guys like Kuhlman just aren't getting it done. Obviously, everyone expected his goal scoring to drop this season, but not the degree to which it has. So I think that a little bit more scoring depth than a number one center again, which is pretty much a pipe dream at this point, but that's what this team needs.
You know, I was noticing how Burke was using his extra cap space to acquire these, you know, sort of third and second liner tweeners, and I thought, oh, well, you know, this is a good way to acquire some scoring depth, you know? Hey, maybe Lombardi could chip in a few extra goals, or, yeah, maybe Colby Armstrong could put in a few, but it really hasn't worked out, and now, on top of that, these players are creating a big cap crunch. And in order to even fit in Grabowski's extension, they're going to need to do something.
I think if I were to, yeah, okay, well, let's deal with forwards. I would have liked to have seen Burke deal Lupul at the trade deadline. I think he's at peak value. He'll never repeat the season he had last year. So I would hope that between now and the draft, we see Lupul get moved. I think we're also, the Leafs are going to have to jettison a lot of dead salary. You know, Lombardi and Armstrong between them eat nearly $7 million in cap space, and they're not producing $7 million worth of results. I also think that it's time to
Scott Gomez begs to differ.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think the Leafs have problems with their forwards. The last time I checked, they're the top 10 in the league in goals for. They've got a pretty talented bunch. It seems they have kind of a nice mix, and they've got a lot of kids in the system. So I think if Burke is going to spend some energy, I'd rather him do it on other parts of the team than forward. I mean, really, I think what has to be done in forward is just clearing salary so that they can make room elsewhere.
So you just bring the kids up?
Yeah, basically. And I don't think you even have to move that many guys. You know, you get rid of Armstrong. Get rid of Lombardi. There's two spots, and there's $7 million in cap space. You know, you pay the kids whatever their league minimum is, and you probably still have $5 million cap space left over. So that's what I'd look for Burke to do. You know, if maybe, and again, I'd consider moving Lupul. Just while his value is as high as it is, because he's not going to put up the points again next year. His shooting percentage was sky high at the beginning of the season, and we've seen it just regress over the year down to his norm. He'll probably repeat that next year, not have the same points, not have the same value, and I just think now is the time to move him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy, and it's a great story, but at the end of the day, his value is never going to be higher than it is right now, and he's not a guy that we're going to be re-signing long-term, so it doesn't make sense to hang on to him, especially now that, you know, this season is a foregone conclusion. Obviously, he's injured and probably won't come back, but next year as well, it just doesn't make sense for him to take a roster spot away from maybe a guy like Kadri to have him there, right?
I think Lupul, his injury history is really going to impede Burke's ability to move him. I mean, not only is he perhaps maybe a little bit overpaid. You know, certainly he's not a bargain. I mean, at his current production rate, of course he's a bargain, but again, no one expects him to repeat that. And I think there are probably still some concerns, you know, that something could happen at that back. And now he's got shoulder issues. Like, that could be something right. That sticks with him for the rest of his career. So I don't know. I think he's maybe one of the tougher ones to move. Except, of course, then Lombardi has a pretty good concussion history as well. And Armstrong is—he's on the Tim Connolly plane of, you know, injurability.
Personally, I'd waive Armstrong.
Yeah,
I just put him on waivers, and if nobody takes a shot at him, if nobody out there wants him, you know, you gave him an opportunity to join 29 other teams and stick him on the Marlies. He's had a brutal run with the Leafs. I think players like him tend to have shorter career spans if you want to be, you know, the gritty, agitating, hitting guy. And I don't even know that he is, but certainly people seem to think he is.
Yeah.
And I just don't see him ever recovering. He's had two back-to-back injury-plagued years. He's getting up there in age, and I just think that's $3.5 million the Leafs could really use elsewhere. So I'd waive him, you know, give him a chance to get a gig with another team, and if nobody bites, see ya. As for Lupul, I think there's got to be one or two dumb GMs out there that are willing to take a flyer on him. I mean, he did put up really impressive numbers this year, was an all-star, he was top five in the league in scoring, and if you know, if the price is right, I could see a lot of GMs taking a bite on that.
So he's going to Columbus, is what you're saying?
Sure, I don't. Yeah, I'm trying to think, because he certainly doesn't have the history to go back to Edmonton, where there's another not so great GM.
Right.
He's probably speaking the wrong language and is too big to go to Montreal. So there's another dumb GM out of contention. So you know, I guess on the spectrum of where the poor GMs are, you just got to find a guy that, you know, you hope Burke can take advantage of, and you know, maybe Jay Feaster. I don't know.
Yeah, I think about Calgary.
I think you wait till the end of the playoffs, and whatever team doesn't score any goals in the playoffs will try and take a run at him, you know. Whatever team has a small sample size where they can't seem to score any goals, they'll try and load up on a scoring winger, and that's where Joffrey Lupul will end up, you know. Maybe Washington blows it again, and George McKee's looking for some more.
L.A. could be a perfect candidate. I think that Burke, if L.A. makes the playoffs, it's on the back of Bernier and Quick. They need goal scoring. Maybe Lupul goes there. What I'd really like to see Burke do is focus his energies elsewhere. I think they've got a pretty good group of forwards here, and that's not where the return on investment needs to come.
Alright, okay, so then let's move on to the D. I think the main issue is that as a unit, again, they're overpaid. But if we could just subtract a couple players, the overpayment doesn't look so bad. I mean, FNUF is FNUF. He's not going anywhere. But then, of course, we've got Shen, who, unfortunately, at this point, I think we have to say is overpaid. You know, obviously, there's Komisarek. But, I mean, you know, outside of that, I mean, you know, looking back, even a couple of years ago, you thought, man, how can this defensive core be so bad? Like, you know, the names just seem to add up well, but I don't know. This is where I think the brunt of Burke's, like, dismantling has got to happen. I mean, goal, you know, hopefully you can solve the issue with one signing, but I don't know where the heck he's going to find help on D.
Okay. I was just going to say, I may be in the minority here, but I don't think the Leafs have a problem on D. I think the Leafs have had such substandard, awful goaltending for so long that it magnifies minor shortcomings on the Leafs D. When the Leafs D make a mistake that 29 other teams make, it's almost always terminal. It almost always ends up in the back of their net. When you watch games, I see, you know, Washington turn the puck over. I see Pittsburgh turn the puck over. And what I see after that is the goalie make a mistake. In Toronto, I see a Leaf player turn the puck over, and boom, it's in the back of the net because we have goalies putting up an .890 save percentage. Like, we're not even remotely close to league average goaltending. So I think it's really hard to assess and evaluate our D when the goaltending is just so horrendously awful. So my takeaway is I don't think it's going to take a lot to patch up this D. I think, you know, you've already seen Carlisle. It's a small sample size, admittedly, but he's really reduced the shots against. And as a result, the goals against have kind of come down, with the exception of that Boston game. I think you stick a good goaltender back there, and our D is going to suddenly look a whole heck of a lot better.
I think you stick a league average goaltender back there, and it's going to look a lot better. And yeah, I definitely agree. Like you said, there's some obvious dead weight. I mean, if we could move Komisarek, that would be great, but I don't see it happening again. Luke Shen would be great to move, but it's just contract and money and who wants what, right? So I think you're right. I think rather than trying to sort of ship out two or three guys and make a lot of moves, if you bring in a capable NHL goaltender, I think you'll get a lot more value out of it than trying to sort of reorganize this whole roster.
And I think, I feel awful for Luke Shen. That contract didn't look bad when it was signed. He's regressed really awfully this year. He's really taken a step back in his development. But I come back to why this franchise made the decision to put an 18-year-old NHLer in the bigs. Like, he really should have spent another year in I think Kelowna was his home club, and probably a year with the Marlies. There was absolutely nothing to be gained in his development from throwing him to the Wolves in the NHL. And then on top of that, the team burns 2 years of his entry-level contract, and now he's got the big second contract that he can't live up to. And I just think that's on the franchise. That's on the Leafs, and that they've really mishandled it.
Well, they just didn't have anyone else to throw as cannon fodder in his place, right? Like, we were signing Jeff Finger to $3.5 million deals at that time, right? Things were bad. We were at a loss for even warm bodies to put on the defense.
Yeah,
but
I guess
fair, I mean, Burke drafts Kadri the next year only two spots back, and we sure could have used a dynamic scoring winger. They didn't throw him in the NHL.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just where the organization was. You know, I think bringing Cliff Fletcher in was fine, but letting him do anything beyond drafting a player and letting that player play out in the minors and trying to fill the roster was a mistake, because no one thought that Cliff Fletcher was going to be the long-term solution here. So why even bother trying to ice a competitive team at the expense of potentially ruining the development of your prized draft pick? It doesn't make sense.
I'm somebody that's never been that wild about Luke Shen. I mean, some people just, they went crazy for this defenseman. And I don't know, I see a guy that's just always been really horrendously slow. You know, offensive instincts, while they may have developed a bit better if, you know, his early post-draft years were handled differently, he was never really a scoring threat, or, you know, this guy never had a cannon from the point or anything. So I guess I don't see Luke Shen as having missed out on some grand potential. I guess I see him as living up to, for me, what was much lower standards.
Well, I think, JV, even if your expectations for Luke are lower, I think that just given where he was drafted and given what the team needed at that point and what its long-term sort of futures were looking like, he's not the kind of guy who you put right into an NHL role. There was nothing to be gained there. You say, you know, maybe he had sort of already hit his ceiling, but I think that some time in juniors playing as, he would have been playing with Tyre Myers. He would have been, maybe even got another shot at the World Juniors. He would have been sort of getting some, you know, pretty plum minutes, you know, top competition, maybe even seeing some time in the power play. Maybe those aspects of his game could have developed a little further. I mean, he certainly wasn't developing them when he was in the NHL, so it's hard to say, right? It's easy to say, well, he didn't look like that, but I think he's shown that he does have some offensive instincts and some offensive capabilities. So I think it would have been interesting. Obviously, we're never going to know, but it would be interesting to have seen what would have happened. And at the very least, as Mike said earlier, we would have another couple of years on that ELC, right? So this contract that he signed now wouldn't be so high, or it would have been a couple of years down the road, and we would have sort of known a little bit more what we had in Luke Shen.
I can't think of many 18-year-olds that have stepped in as defensemen and made a meaningful contribution. I can think of several Leaf defensemen that were brought in as 18-year-olds and crashed and burned. So I just think it's asset mismanagement, but it's, you know, it's a sunk cost now. It's a done deal. So
yeah. So now, I don't know. Do you deal him, or you think we got to fix the goaltending before we think about that? Da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I think the primary thing to do is to fix the goaltending. I think that's the very first thing that Burke needs to concentrate on. I'd be really hesitant to trade a Luke Shen. He's got a good draft pedigree. He looked okay in his first few seasons, and that contract certainly to me, and to most people I discussed, didn't seem that crazy, that out of line.
Yeah.
And I think this is the type of thing where if you trade Luke Shen, he goes on to play 1,200 games in the NHL, and 5 years from now, when he's at his peak, we're all saying, boy, we could sure use a bang-it-off-the-glass, shut-it-down guy like Luke Shen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the things sort of that began this conversation was JP saying, you know, given what we expected this season and how we're comparing to last and where do we go from here, the one thing that everyone was saying, you know, was that this is a playoff bubble team. And, you know, if they can play over their minds or over their heads for a couple of months, maybe they'll move up a little bit more. What a lot of people weren't saying was, you know, what happens if everything implodes and everything goes to crap? Well, you know, then they're potentially a lottery. And so I think that this was always a possibility, and to sort of decide that this team is done for and to sort of throw everything out the window based on, like you said, about a month of 800 save percentage just doesn't seem like the best plan. I think that you sign an NHL caliber goaltender if you can, or you bring someone in for the love of God, and you see what happens. You know, I think Michael's right. We do have a decent set of forwards and defensemen. Obviously, the lineup could use some tweaking, but if you give it consistent league average goaltending, then I think you can't make any assessments without seeing what the team looks like with that first, right?
Well, I think, you know, everybody right now is really down on Burke, and I, with due cause. I mean, he has done some, you know, less than ideal things during his tenure. But if you put, you know, a decent goalie on this club, this team is probably in sixth or seventh in the East.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us are having this conversation.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
One thing I will say, and I don't know, this is maybe just rhetoric on the part of Burks, but, you know, talking all the time about building from the net out, I mean, it's true, he signed goaltending prospects, but I mean, if the goalie is your cornerstone, as he has professed on so many occasions, isn't that what you spend the big money on? Isn't that what you go out and you say, all right, before we do anything else, we are going to secure our goaltending? And really, it seems like that's the opposite that's happened, right? I mean, first we went to the D, he signed Komisarek and Beauchemin, and then there was Kessel, but he seems to have completely forgotten his own plan.
Well, and I think this is one of the reasons that I'm not 100% on board with Burke, is that you look at where he's been GM, and Vancouver was an elephant's graveyard for goaltenders. It was just, you know, you if you go to Hockey Reference and call up the club during his time there, it's just a who's who of awful. You know, Kluche and Old and Garth Snow and Bob Asensa, and like, it's just dreadful, dreadful goalies. And that team never went anywhere, never had any success, and it was because they had just crap between the pipes. And then he went to Anaheim, and, you know, luckily he had Chiguer, but what does he do? He waves Brizgalov. You know, yeah. He doesn't even get like a fifth round pick for a goalie who's gone on to have, you know, a heck of a career and good numbers. And then he comes to Toronto, and again, he's trotted out just this laundry list of awful, awful goaltending, and he's never fixed it. You know, they've never addressed it. And so my concern is, you know, it's easy for the three of us to sit here and say, boy, if we could just get league average goaltending. I don't know that Burke can do that.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned Brizgalov, because I was reading today, I can't remember where I read it, so sorry for the article that I'm referencing but not giving credit to, but that one of the reasons Burke was forced to waive Brizgalov as opposed to trading for him was because his salary was apparently untradeable. Now, whether or not you believe that is one thing, but I think that's interesting. Yeah, like you said, they got nothing back for him, but maybe no one was interested, right? So it's tough to say. But on the other hand, yeah, I agree with you. I think the first move Dave Nonis made when he got to Vancouver was to trade for Luongo, was it not? Might have been one of his first or second.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but I know it was early. And I think that might be a point of contention between Burke and Nonis and maybe the rest of the front office. So it'll be interesting to see sort of what happens in this offseason. Maybe we can just offer Sheet Carey Price for, like, everything we have.
Oh, no, I don't know if I could live with that.
Oh, yeah, I could.
Anyway.
You know what? I could stand Pol Pot playing net if you put up good numbers.
What about a guy like Ryan Miller? If Buffalo doesn't do anything, do you think there's a chance he could be moved?
That's a heck of a reclamation project. I don't know. Miller's not had a good year, but that's a good question.
Well, I know that they're now owned by Moneybags Pegula, but the thing is that at some point, even the private owner who's, you know, all in to win, is going to say, well, you know, this summer was a total disaster, even though we spent all this money. It's time to start mitigating some of our losses and trying to rebuild. I can see him starting to ship out some of the bigger contracts, or, you know, him asking Regeer to ship out some of the bigger contracts on payroll.
Well, they signed Billy Leno, so maybe they're not very smart when it comes to players' production and unsustainability, so maybe Lupo goes there.
I do know that Burke did say that of the GMs in the NHL, when he did the barn fight interview, he talked about how difficult he found it to trade with Darcy Regeer, that they just spoke a different language. So yeah, that may impede any dreams of Miller.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Regeer's out. You know, the Sabres have been pretty terrible, all things considered.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It almost seems like sacrilege in Buffalo. I mean, they've been Regeer and... good grief, what's his face, the coach?
Lindy Ruff.
Right.
Lindy Ruff, yeah. I mean,
they've been around the Teflon for coach. Ages, yeah. And as a matter of fact, he just signed an extension, right? Yeah, you never know. Crazy things have happened. They could bring in some new blood there. All right, so I guess the consensus on the Leafs is that first we need a goalie. God, we need a goalie. And after that, we're going to look for a first line center. That's the shopping list.
Well, I mean, I don't think you can say that's exactly what we need, but you know, we're not necessarily going to find it. So I think I think you need a little bit more. Again, the team's scoring goals, so it's hard to say what exactly you need. But if something like that comes available, great, you know, but I don't know if Burke's going to be able to do too much. And if he only can do one thing, I think adding a goaltender's obviously got to be top priority.
See,
you know, I had lunch recently with, I don't know if you know God, Till, Jeremy from a former blog, Cox Block, and he raised a very good point. He said, you know, what if the problem in Toronto isn't Burke's aversion to signing a big-name goalie? Maybe it's that Allaire thinks he can take a C or a C-plus prospect and turn him into an A-plus goalie. So he's saying to Burke, you know, you get me the efficient contract guy, like a Reimer or Gustafson, and I will turn them into, you know, Jaguar circa, you know, his Stanley Cup win.
Well, you know, I think as a teacher, that seems like an appealing thing, because you want your students to do well. You develop a connection with them, and you really, not only is it a reflection of your own, you know, professional ability, but it's also, you know, a very, very personal thing. You want to see that person succeed. And I could totally see Allaire, you know, sort of holding out on a prospect. He doesn't want to cut bait on a student. And he, in his interview, defending the goalies a few weeks ago, he went on to say, well, you know, these things take time, you know, like I've been handed a whole bunch of young goalies, but they're not that young and they're all really raw. So this could be a long process.
I was just going to say, how would you guys feel if the Leafs came back next year with the same goaltending tandem?
Oh, man. And I think at that point, you know, I would predict finishing outside of the playoffs once again. I think that would be it. Like, Burke goes.
Is despondent too? That's not even close enough to what I would feel. But I think, I don't know, I remember when Pekka-Rinne signed his, you know, massive contract, everyone was sort of saying, well, you know, this is a huge overpayment, let's look closer at the numbers, and they were saying, you know, these sort of quote-unquote elite goalies really are only slightly, and usually not even sustainably better than league average, right? And so they were sort of saying, you know, this is a market inefficiency that GM should be looking at, and, you know, overpaying for goaltenders is nonsense, and that's true, and I think maybe that's the strategy, like you said, that, like God Till mentioned, that's the strategy Burke's been trying to employ, is saying, you know, let's take a guy who costs a lot less money and turn him into a league average goaltender. It just hasn't worked. And whether or not it's something that's just sheer probability, or, you know, these goalies are terrible, or who knows what, maybe that was their strategy, and now they're going to have to sort of look at reevaluating it and spend a little bit more money, but get, you know, a little bit closer to a sure thing to league average, right?
You know, I don't even think you need to spend that much in order to get there, really. I mean, most years there are, you know, three or four goalies who sign free agent contracts close to the league minimum because they just need to land somewhere. Scott Clemenson, that guy gets signed like every year for like a 1-year deal to go somewhere new. And, you know, aside from when he was playing for us, he's put up a pretty average backup career, you know? And there's just no excuse for not picking up a goaltender like that.
Well, I think you look at Brian Elliott in St. Louis. Did anyone think that was going to happen? No. Is it probably going to happen ever again? No. It just seems like, is it a matter of luck? Is it something the Leafs are doing right or wrong? They're, like, you know, Mike said, it's like maybe this was their strategy and it just sort of blew up in their face. But was it the wrong strategy, right? Because like you said, you can find a guy like a Scott Clemenson or Brian Elliott, or even, you know, look at what Jaguar's doing in Colorado this year. It just seems to me it has to be the worst luck ever, or there's something actually wrong with, you know, I have no idea what Toronto has done to turn itself into a goalie graveyard.
But that seems like
can it be this bad by design, or is it just dumb luck, or I don't understand.
I don't know. It just seems like too crazy a strategy for me. You know, like, well, rather than spend money on a good goalie, we'll just get a few bad ones and wait for one of them to get hot. You know, like...
Well, I don't think anyone's saying bad.
Well... are any of our goalies not bad? I don't know.
We're pretty much in agreement that if the Leafs come back with Reimer and Gustafson next year, there'll be a revolt, I guess, for lack of a better word. I'd tune out, to be honest.
I'd be like,
wake me up when they get a better goalie.
Even if these goalies go on to do something else somewhere, it's sort of similar to, you know, the sort of impetus for firing Ron Wilson. Maybe Ron Wilson wasn't the problem. Maybe Ron Wilson was a decent coach, you know. But it's pretty clear that he wasn't going to get it done here. He wasn't a long-term solution. It wasn't working. Something needed to be done. You know, maybe Jonas Gustafsson turns into a quality NHL backup or 1B starter. You know, I still have hope that James Reimer is the better of the two goalies. But I think you have to bring someone in just to sort of say that we're addressing this problem. We see this as a problem. We're doing something about it, you know. And I think you owe that to the rest of the team first and foremost, but then, you know, your fans and management and everybody else sort of observing.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I understand, you know, teams just by being patient are able to, you know, develop a good team. I just don't know if those pieces are in place here, you know. Buffalo has done it time and time again. You know, they just rise up out of the ashes with, you know, some goalie who, you know, more or less came out of nowhere, and then, you know, he puts the team on their backs, and they've got a few players that buy into the system, do really well, you know. Then they leave, they go elsewhere, and they fall on their faces because they're not a part of the Buffalo system anymore, a la Danny Briere. Tim Connolly hasn't exactly lit up the world, but, you know.
Briere's been good since he left Buffalo. Not great, but good.
Still not great. I mean, when he was in Buffalo, I mean, he was, like, if not leading the league, very close to it in points, you know? Like, he had his sort of golden years there and then left and was, you know...
Because he played the Leafs six times a year.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't hurt. Spent a week in a dusty library, waiting for some words to jump in me. We met by a trick of fate. French Navy, my sailor mate. All right, okay. One last thing I figured we should touch on. The GM meetings are going on right now, and we talk about a lot of rule changes, as they always do, but I suspect that, you know, we're not going to see that many changes. You know, maybe some version of no-touch icing. Apparently, Burke's bear hug rule has been shot down again.
The strangest one is they're talking about making a two-minute minor to glove the puck ahead in the defensive zone.
Yeah, that's just insane. Like, who ever thinks this is an issue?
That's what I'd like to know. How did this get on the agenda? Like, I don't think that's a problem. I don't think, like, if anything, it shouldn't be a minor. If you don't like it, blow the puck dead, you know, and do, like, an icing call, you know? Put it face-off dot closest to the net, and the defensive side doesn't get a change. But that seems to me a really, a bit of an outlier there, an anomaly. I don't know why the GMs would be picking up on that one. I personally hate the puck over the ice penalty.
Puck over the glass, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, puck over the glass penalty, and I think that's exactly what this one will be. It'll be, you know, some guy will touch the puck with his hand, and the whole team will throw their arm up in the air to call it, and it's just garbage.
I'm not crazy about it. The place I think this all stems from, though, is that everyone's all in a tizzy about how the number of power plays per game is going down. I mean, I don't want the whole game to be decided on the power play. I'm, quite frankly, pretty happy that there aren't as many penalties per game. I would like to see the game played at 5-on-5 as long as possible, really.
I'm indifferent to the rate of penalty call. I would just like to see consistent officiating within a game. I'm not talking game to game, but, you know, how often do you see the refs just put their pockets away late in the game? And it just, stuff gets out of hand and stuff, you know, if it's a penalty in the first 5 minutes, it should be a penalty in the last 5 minutes. And that's all I'm asking for. I don't care what the rate of power play is or what the, you know, what the number of 5-on-3 are. I'm not too concerned with that. I just would like to see quality, consistent officiating. And you know, maybe I'm a grumpy old man, but this year seems to have been just awful watching the games. The officiating has just seemed really, really poor.
What grade would you give to Shanahan?
Oh, I grade him on two scales. I'm like a C or a D. But I think in terms of what he's been mandated to do, he probably gets, you know, a nice high B or a low A. I don't think they want a disciplinarian.
No. Well, what is he doing then?
I think he's, you know, he's... So anyways, I put up a post about this, looking at the incident of fines in the NHL. And for years, the NHL leveled maybe 5 fines a season. I think Shanahan has put up nearly 30 this year. Mm. And I think that's his. I think that's the biggest thing Shanahan has done, is move the discipline model away from suspensions and towards fines. And I think that makes the owners and the NHLPA happy, because the maximum fine is only $2,500, which is, you know, sock money to these guys.
Yeah.
They get to play, which makes the owners happy, because when the fans come, the superstar isn't sitting in the press box. He's on the ice $2,500 poorer. So that's what I personally think Shanahan's biggest contribution has been leveling fines. I don't think he's cleaned up the game. I don't think he's been remotely consistent. I think the fact that he didn't suspend Lucic for running over Miller is laughable. I think that's just, if Coley Powell did that, people would be up in arms and talking about his incompetence. So, yeah, I'm not a big Shanahan fan, but I think you have to step back and ask yourself, like, what do his bosses want him to do? And I get the feeling he's carrying their water. He's doing, you know, what's expected.
The way I look at it is really from the perspective that we used to have Colin Campbell. And I feel like this was a marginal upgrade. So, you know, Shanahan's presence, I feel, on balance is a good thing. But, you know, that's not saying much, right? It's like, whoever got in after George W. Bush to be president was going to do a better job. And, you know, it just didn't take much to be better. You know, whoever got in was going to be, you know, declared a hero for not being the other guy.
Yeah, and I think it might just be that I think I haven't either noticed these events, but it seems like, and maybe again, this is just sample size and luck, but it seems as though at the beginning of the season there were so many cringeworthy hits and guys just doing stupid things, and that incidents that seem to have gone down now again might just be I haven't noticed them, and this is terrible, just, you know, availability heuristic, and I'm not noticing these events, or, you know, they're not on the TV as much. But it just does seem like, you know, those sort of violent incidents are down this season. But then again, like you said, it's because they're lacking that consistency, and they've moved to a fine more than a suspension. People talk a lot more about a suspension when it's handed down than they do a fine, right? You know, how many games, too much, too many, how much pay is this guy going to lose, that sort of thing. But when it's a fine, it seems like it goes away a lot more quickly than a suspension does.
Here's another thing that, you know, you're sort of touching on. Do you think that the league needs to do more to keep players safe? Because a lot of people, you know, are calling for you know, a number of different measures. I mean, some things like the no-touch icing is an interesting rule change. But, you know, then there's alterations to equipment, alterations to the rink, you know, whether or not they're going to make it bigger, smaller, you know, do things like modify the glass. Then on top of that, how they treat concussions or plays where a concussion ensues.
I think you can't go too crazy, right? I mean, someone suggested taking out the red line or bringing back the sort of, you know, two-line pass as something that's prohibited, and that would just be insane. Like, I think that we've seen pretty clearly that rule change was good for the game. It was better for the game, you know. There are other ways of dealing with the speed that apparently it generates or the problems that it creates than by putting it back in. Because I think that you're going to get a different kind of game, obviously, after it, and potential issues. People still got injured when there was a two-line pass, you know, there. So I think doing the little things that make sense, like some sort of hybrid or no-touch icing. I don't understand why the NHL just can't move to no-touch, but if they want to try the hybrid, that's fine. But I think that, yeah, I think you have to do something, but I think that we shouldn't sensationalize it and look too much into it by changing, you know, fundamental aspects of the game that have proven to be good for the, you know, game of hockey and enjoyable to watch as fans, right?
And I think a big part of this is on the NHLPA. It's my understanding that the NHLPA has opposed mandatory visors and facial equipment and that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's only so much the NHL could do to make this game safe, and I think the players need to get more involved and more engaged in this topic. And I'd love to see smaller, softer equipment. I'd love to see mandatory face shields, but It doesn't seem like that's something the players actually want.
Right, and I think going back to what we said about a guy like Colby Armstrong, it's pretty clear that the players don't always have their best interests in mind. This is a guy who's had injury problems all season, concussion problems, and goes and gets in an essentially meaningless fight in the game against Boston, right? And it's because, like you said, the type of game he supposedly plays, that's part of it. If he's going to show his value, that's part of how he does it. But it's a guy who can't afford to be doing that right now, you know?
Absolutely, and on the flip side of all these things is there's always the unintended consequences. You know, if you put in mandatory face shields, are we going to see more stick work? If you take out, you know, certain types of fighting, are we going to see what Brian Burke would call the rats? You know, and I think that's one thing we need to really keep in mind and be cautious of as we talk about changing the game is often, you know, the governors, they change it with one goal in mind and something else, you know, that they didn't foresee results. So I would like to see safer players. I think we have to be wary of what the rule changes might actually accomplish.
I confess to being somewhat callous about all this. You know, I at the end of the day, you know, if you can make a minor change to the game that helps players remain safe, then, you know, by all means, great. But I'm really, really loath to get up in arms about, you know, concussions or, you know, we need to slow down the game. Like, I thought that was wild earlier this week when it was proposed that the game should be slowed down for the safety of the players. Like, I just thought, like, what? Like, would you introduce a governor pin on, like, NASCAR racing or something? Like, this just seems...
Well, they do.
It's crazy. Do they actually?
Yeah, there's restrictor plates on the engines. Those cars could actually go faster than they currently do go. But, you know, they still go pretty damn fast.
Good grief.
I don't know how you, quote-unquote, slow down the game. Like, these are big guys in peak physical condition who, you know, what's the average shift in the NHL? It's less than a minute. Like, they're climbing over the boards and going as hard as they can for a minute. So I don't know how you take that speed out of the game.
Yeah.
I think it's there to stay.
And I think that's what people like about the game. You know, I think that NHL has always been popular and exciting, but I think really post-lockout, the quality of the hockey, it has just been so much better. I mean, you look back at some of the highlights of just because they were doing all the Mario Lemieux statues, and you watch some of the players he's playing against, and yeah, he was phenomenal, but look at the goalies he's facing. They can't even make a save on the most, what would be a routine save now for a goalie made a highlight reel goal for Mario Lemieux, you know, and I think that the quality of play has just increased so much, and there's so much talent in the league that you have to, like you said, you can't slow it down. These guys are just too big, too good. They're going for too fast at too short of a period of time, and I think that's like what JP said. You have to do the little things to make it safer, but it's never going to be, you know, 100% the safest thing around.
I don't know if you guys saw the TVO panel when Down Goes Brown, Sean was on with Ken Dryden and others, and Ken Dryden said back in his day, guys would routinely take 2-minute shifts, you know, 2.5-minute shifts. Yeah. Whereas now, you know, guys are out there for 30, 40 seconds, and so they can go full bore the whole time. Whereas back in his day, guys weren't in the greatest shape. You know, Guy Lafleur used to smoke between periods. And if he's on the ice for 2 minutes, boy, you're not moving too quick. So, you know, the game has fundamentally changed. And the players are so much bigger that, it's just simple physics.
Yeah, like you say, stronger.
You know, those big guys move at that speed, and whammo.
There was that letter that's been on the internet about, I think it was Conn Smythe posted it, you know, when the Leafs were coming back to the start of the season, and it was, you must be able to do 15 push-ups and like 12 hi-yas or some, you know, Mr. Burns exercise regimen. And it was just laughable, right? Because it's like, I could probably do those things right now, and I'm not in shape at all. Like, it was just sort of, and it was like, you know, we're going to go golfing, and, you know, you come back, you know, that was in game shape, and it's just, yeah, it's definitely changed so, so much, and just the athletes are in much better shape.
I'd like to know what you guys think Burke's gonna. I shot my mouth off on this to no end. I think that at the draft, if the Leafs draft out of the top four, I think Burke trades the pick. I think, you know, this is year four for Burke. He needs to make an impact, and if his pick isn't top five, top four, they're not going to make an impact on the roster for 2 to 3 years. He doesn't have that time. So I think it's Gonzo. And I just wonder what you guys think the Leafs are going to do with the draft.
Are you looking for will or should?
Give me both.
Oof. All right, Danny, you want to go first?
I think, yeah, like Mike said, it depends on where that pick is. I even think that whether or not, if I think it's in the top 10, Burke thinks a little harder about it. I think top 5 he's obviously drafting, but there would be some flexibility there. But again, it all depends on, you know, what you can swing and who's available. There's been talk of Columbus even thinking about trading their top pick, right? So if they're looking to do that, maybe the Leafs are a natural partner there. If they're already looking to trade down, why not add another top 10 pick? Maybe Burke takes a run at Rick Nash. God knows, he probably wants to. So I think what they should do is stand pat, draft the player wherever they are. I mean, we're looking long-term here. You're not going to find a solution to save the franchise at the draft. And I think that, you know, maybe even try and get another first-round pick because, you know, Malcolm Subban looks like a pretty decent goaltender. Again, a few years down the road, but God knows the team's going to still be here when Burke's gone. And I think that you draft where you are, you try and add some more picks if you can, and then you get creative around July 1st and try and sign a goalie, trade for a goalie, do whatever you can that way. I think that even though people say the draft is where things happen, I don't think you're going to see a lot of movement there. I think Burke will want to, but he's said that basically every year, and he's never been able to really do anything because I think that far too many teams aren't ready right then because they think, oh, I can solve my problems July 1st, or let's see what's available July 1st, so nothing major usually goes down, you know?
I don't know.
I think they're going to draft probably twice in the first round. Someone will go for a first-round pick between now and the draft, and then they'll draft someone top five, maybe a goalie in the first round as well, or another sort of useless power forward prospect like Tyler Biggs. And then Burke swing and a miss on July 1st, and then they trade for, oh, let's say, who's the worst goalie they could possibly bring in at this point? Brian Elliott. There we go. That's what's going to happen.
Oh, maybe Rolison. That would be...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Martin Biron. He's got time.
You know, myself, I think that I wouldn't be entirely opposed to trading that first round. I mean, I guess it depends on what's coming back, right? I mean, I guess I feel like the Leafs... Okay, obviously, they were not as good as they were at the beginning of the season, but they were also not as bad as they have been, you know, over this last stretch. You know, I guess I do feel like with a goalie and, you know, heck, if they have to trade that, you know, let's say they get a goalie and then they decide to trade that first rounder for some all-star forward or in some package, you know, then fine. I guess that's okay. But if it's like a first for Semyon Varlamov, like, oh, man. I'm going to be upset.
Yeah, I think Burke trades a pick, which I'm not opposed to. If the return, I'd trade anybody if the return is right. So,
yeah, that's true.
As for what they do, I think you know what? If it's outside the top four, the pick gets dealt. For what? I don't know. I hope it's for goaltending help, but, you know, for all I know, he's going to deal for, you know, Nash and another third line gritty, you know, guy with a big heart.
RJ Umberger.
Exactly. Sure. There you go. There's your third line center. And then if the pick is lower back, you know what? If the pick is lower back, I don't really care what they do with it. You know, if they're picking like 13th, 15th, you know, we don't really need a Yuri Tulisti. So
yeah.
If he deals it, he deals it. But I just hope that whatever move they make, they get a quality player for the team.
I guess like a lot of Burke's other moves, I think it's just important that the deal makes long-term sense as well as just, you know, short-term. You know, because if Burke makes some deal to get himself into the playoffs, you know, between here and like a year or two from now, I think he's just running with the wrong core of players, right? Like he needs big-time help and goal, and you know, if he doesn't address that, I don't know if there's much sense making a big deal for anything else.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I think that the change in goal is just, again, it's when they say, you know, if you add an elite player on the top, it pushes everybody else down the roster a little bit, and, you know, you increase your team not only by adding that top player, but by sort of making the lower end, putting them in better situations to succeed, etc. I think when you add a top-quality goalie, it takes a little bit of the pressure off. Like you said, the defense can make a few more mistakes, the teams can play a little bit more aggressively, and, again, the mistakes that happen aren't putting this team down to, what is it, 6 points in 16 games or something insane like that. And I think that the sort of, they're not as far away as people might think, just based on, you know, the events of the past month, which are hopefully never to again be repeated. It was one of the things I looked at before the season started, was sort of the Leafs' annual tradition of, you know, crapping the bed for five or six games. And I said, you know, the key thing is that since James Reimer took over as the number one goaltender, they hadn't lost more than three games. And I think that this stretch now might probably be their worst post-lockout. And I knew it was going to be bad, but just to see this coming was not in the cards for me. I thought, you know, maybe they'd cap out at five or six games of terribleness, but this has just been almost a month of just terrible, terrible hockey.
Yeah, I don't know that this stretch the Leafs are on has been replicated post lockout by any team. You know, they have two wins in 5 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. I do believe it's 12 and 2.
Yeah, I don't know that any team has put up a record that abysmal over that stretch of games. I was just saying that, and that says something. Like when you're setting a new record for crapitude, that's you know.
Well, they are the only team not to, or at least they will be the only team not to make the playoffs since the lockout. Once I think Florida makes it.
Yep, yeah, that's true.
There's still an if. But I think that, like you said, the streak is unprecedented. But look where they were before it started, right? You know, they had just won three or four games in a row or something like that. And they were sitting within striking distance of, like, fourth in the conference. And then, boom, just done, gone.
It's the worst part of all of it is like, what? They're still only, what, five points out?
Yeah, five or six points back.
Yeah, like, that's the worst part. If they had played 500 hockey, they'd be a playoff team.
Ugh. Yeah. All right. Well,
again, it's like this team has found a way to sort of, okay, this is, things are good. The only, even, I remember just article after article saying, you know, all the Leafs have to do is play 500 hockey the rest of the way and they'll be a lock for the playoffs. And how can that not happen? This is, it's crazy that it happened like that. Like, you literally can't make this stuff up.
All right. I think that's a good spot to cap it. So if you guys are still listening, thank you so much. And please leave any comments you have down below. Mike, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'd love to do this anytime.
Right on. Cool. Danny,
we'll see you next week.
See you next week.